Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. In today's episode, I wanted to do a little fun thing. I don't know if it's really a fun thing. I'm calling it a fun thing. But recently, I posted a post on Instagram and it was called What I Wouldn't Do If I Had to Recover from Chronic Fatigue, CFSME, All Over Again. And it was just really going through some of the mistakes that I made in my own journey, and then also some of the mistakes I see clients making, and just breaking them down really into like little snippets or tips for people. And the post was very popular, got a lot of engagement, and I thought actually it'd be quite nice to do a podcast on this topic. So that's what I'm going to be covering in today's episode. We're going to be looking at the things I wouldn't do if I had to do it all over again. So as always, if you haven't yet left a review for the podcast, I would love it if you could do that for me. All you need to do is leave a rating on Spotify, or you can leave a rating on iTunes. If you feel inspired, you can also share a little paragraph, I believe, on iTunes. Or you can even just share the podcast or a particular episode with someone who you think it might be useful for, or someone in your chronic illness community. So please, if you haven't already done that, that will be great. It helps other people find the content, find information that can really, really be game changing for them or really support them on the trajectory of their illness. So that's a real wonderful way that you can give back to your community and help more people find this work. But other than that, let's go straight into the topic, things that I wouldn't do if I had to do it all over again. These are in no particular order. I've just kind of jotted them down again before recording today. But the first one is not to make too many changes at once in an attempt to achieve at healing. I've probably talked about this previously in other episodes of the podcast, but in my own healing journey, I was in such a rush to achieve and show everyone how fast I could heal and how good I was at healing that I threw so many things at my body and at my nervous system in the early stages. I completely bypassed the grief and the sadness and the loss of what I was experiencing with my health. And although there was a certain degree of success from doing so many things and really going into action mode, it wasn't really creating the stable foundation that I needed for the marathon that is the healing journey. And what I have really acknowledged since, and what I see with the people that I work with, is there's definitely a need to acknowledge the grief and the loss of the change in your health, and also to make little changes more often than a lot of big changes all at once, because the latter can be very overwhelming for a system that is already very likely overwhelmed. So that would be the first thing that I would do, is really just take this little and often approach to the healing journey and layer in changes that feel manageable to the system. The challenge is that when we've come from a place of dysregulation, that's usually how we've arrived in the place in our health journey that we're in, we're not always connected to our truth. We're not always connected to our needs. We're so preconditioned to running life a million miles an hour. It's hard to really know what the right pace is for us. And I see this going kind of both ways with clients sometimes, is that sometimes they're very gung-ho and they want to charge ahead, and then they kind of burn out or they find it overwhelming and then they really have to slow down. Or they find that they almost take things really slowly when they could potentially be doing more. And so there's this delicate dance we have to take with the nervous system just to pace changes and pace the healing journey at the right pace for your system. And that pace will change depending on what else you've got going on in your life. Sometimes we need to take a step back from healing and allow space for integration. Sometimes we can really focus more fully on our healing and we can go into some of those tricky or sticky parts, but it isn't always easy. But what I would say for the most part is less is more, and slow and gentle is sometimes the fastest way to get there. And learning how to attune to yourself, how to connect with yourself, and really honor your needs is the journey of healing. You might not necessarily get it right, you know, every time or in the beginning, but more and more as you walk the path, this will get easier and easier. And then you'll really be able to feel into what is too little, what is too much, what's just right, and then work at the pace which is appropriate for you. So that's point number one. The second one, and there are eight of these, by the way, is the thing I wouldn't do if I had to do it all over again is neglect the importance of pacing. In the early stages of my journey, nobody mentioned pacing to me. Bearing in mind, there weren't that many people that were supporting me, so there weren't that many people who may have mentioned pacing to me, but nobody mentioned that pacing was something that I needed to be aware of. And I was so preconditioned to living my life in a sympathetic state, always pushing, charging ahead, any sense of slowing down or slowness was felt really, really slow. It was incredibly uncomfortable to rest, to go more slowly, let alone find a rhythm in my day where I did a little bit, rest a little bit, did a little bit, rest a little bit. And it really took a very, very long time for me to understand what this whole pacing thing was all about. And to be fair, sometimes I still don't get it right. Sometimes I am still prone to that charging ahead and maybe doing more than what I should and not resting enough. Granted, I have more resilience now to cope with that. But it's really, really taken a long time and many, many ups and downs and many, many failures before I really learned how to pace. But what I can tell you is that pacing really does make a difference. And when I work with clients and they start to get it right, and when I started to get it more right myself, that was when I really started to have more stability in my day. And you might be getting mixed messages about pacing. Some people say, well, you shouldn't pace yourself because then you're acknowledging that you're unwell and you should just push through, or you shouldn't pay attention to your symptoms. They're not real and you should just push through. And my belief system, if we're going to call it that, is we really do want to learn to listen to ourselves. This journey of healing is one of reconnection to truth, to our needs, to ourselves, and really being able to listen in a way that we likely never listened to ourselves before. And so this idea of pushing through and overriding and ignoring doesn't really sit well with the journey of reconnection. We have to be careful what we're listening to. Are we listening to a fearful voice that's saying, no, it's not safe to expand. You're never going to get well. We have to be mindful of the different voices and different parts inside of ourselves. But if we can really listen to our truth and honor that and use that as a way that we can pace, we stabilize our physiology, we stabilize our nervous system, and this creates the foundation for moving forward with our health. So pacing matters. You know, how we pace is different for different individuals. Some people have to really pace on a very micro level, and some people have a bit more flexibility with their pacing. But however we are pacing, it matters so that we have periods of activity, periods of rest throughout the day, and we give our system a bit of a break. So the next thing, things I wouldn't do if I had to do it all over again, would be trying to stay calm all the time. This is something that comes up a lot with the clients that I work with. They are constantly striving to relax, to settle, to calm, to soothe their systems. And rest matters. Our parasympathetic nervous system is our healing state. It's where we restore, where we recover, where we repair. But we don't want to be in that system all of the time. A healthy nervous system should pendulate between activation and settling, activation and settling. And we naturally actually move through states of activation and states of settling throughout the day. Many people who experience chronic illness usually have a system that's stuck and can no longer naturally pendulate. This could be they either get very stuck into activation, a sympathetic nervous system state, stuck on, or they can get stuck off, which means they're in more of a dorsal, flat, freeze, disconnected type of state. And actually to be able to move between states and become and mainly be able to return to regulation is what we're looking for. But this doesn't happen through trying to be calm all the time. This happens by also building our capacity to lean into states of more activation and then come back to a more settled place afterwards. And this is what a lot of people need to learn to do, is they can often feel so fearful of activation. They often want to fix it. They want to change it. They want to calm down. And the reality is, before we can calm down, sometimes there might be something that needs to be expressed. Maybe something that was not able to complete at the time that it needed to be completed. It could have been a defensive movement. It could have been you using your voice to vocalize a no. It could have been you activating into your body to run away or to get away from something. So inevitably, these stuck states of activation are stuck survival responses in the body. If we can encourage the body to reconnect with what wants to happen and complete what wants to happen, then the body naturally pendulates back into a place of calm. And then we can experience more regulation with more ease without having to work so hard and try so hard in order to achieve that. So this is actually a lot of what we teach in the Nurturing Resilience membership. I've got a nervous system course. And yes, we have tools that help the body settle. But what we're really working towards throughout the course is to help the body pendulate. As the body pendulates between different states, we build our capacity to be with activation, and we build our capacity to also be with the positive and joyful and wonderful sensations of life. And little by little, our capacity grows and we can be more in the world. So number four is trying to exercise before reducing inflammation. Very, very guilty of this one. I used to love exercise so much. It was such a big part of my identity. It was such a big part of who I am as a person. And the fact that I could no longer exercise without getting brain fog or crashing or feeling just awful was a really, really hard thing for me to accept in terms of my illness. And what that meant is I was constantly saying, okay, I've rested for a few days. I'm feeling a little bit better. Let me try this. Or then that didn't work. Okay, I've rested for a few days. I'm feeling a little bit better. Let me try that. And then that wouldn't work. Eventually, it really, really took a long time for me to arrive at this place. But it wasn't really until I properly started to address the inflammation in my body that I was able to expand my exercise capacity. Yes, I could walk, but I could walk because walk is a low intensity exercise. It wasn't causing inflammation. The way that exercise works in the body is when we exercise, we actually generate some inflammation. And then a healthy system positively adapts to that inflammation. And through that positive adaptation, we build fitness and resilience. And then the next time we come to exercise, we can do a little bit more. But a system that is inflamed, if we then start to exercise, the body just experiences more inflammation and it becomes overwhelmed by that inflammation. There's no positive adaptation. In fact, it's probably deconditioning which happens. And then we feel worse. And we also feel just mentally discouraged from the experience. And then it's really hard to know where to go from there. So what we want to do is manage the inflammation in the body first, so that then when we choose to exercise, even if it's a teeny, teeny, tiny little amount, that we're not adding more fuel to that fire. And then little by little, even if we add a teeny, teeny, tiny amount of exercise, we are then able to positively adapt to that exercise. And then we can do a little bit more. And then we can do a little bit more. And then we're constantly also showing our nervous system, exercise is safe for me. Exercise is safe for me. And little by little, we can grow and expand. But we must deal with the underlying inflammation in the body first. And here, as a caveat, I would also just say that sometimes people get post-exertional malaise because of their nervous system only. This is separate to managing inflammation in the body. So sometimes there can be a fear response that is overcoupled with the act of exercise. The exercise is bringing up some sort of emotional experience, usually fear, usually from the past history of trying to exercise and not being able to. And then when we exercise, the nervous system becomes activated, it brings up symptoms, and we experience that as PEM. That can also be a cause of post-exertional malaise after exercise, and in which case we need to support the nervous system to uncouple the experience of exercise or movement from the emotion or the fear. But that's one way that some people may need to work on their ability to exercise. Other people may need to work on the inflammatory load in the body. And from experience, I would say most people are working with both. It's not necessarily one or the other. So then the fifth one is spending a fortune on gadgets before mastering the basics. And I would say, what gadgets did I spend my money on? Probably the one kind of like big investment that I made that was wonderful, but not actually helpful, was I bought a red light. And I know some people, I received messages from people who said, I bought a red light and it changed everything for me. And that is also is the nature of chronic illness. Sometimes we have to try things and see if they work or not without the expectation that they will. And if you do stumble across something, you're like, wow, I'm so glad I did that. That really made a difference. That's great. But we can also start to spend a lot of money on these things when in the long run, it's really important that we set some really great foundations. So I bought a red light and I liked it. It felt nice to use it. I didn't notice any appreciable change in my capacity from using it. And at that point in time, I had a lot of inflammation in my body, mainly from mold, mycotoxins, and also like overgrowths of bacteria, mold spore colonization, some parasites were kicking around there as well. And who knows what else was there that I didn't know about. But with all of that going on in my body was too overloaded to really get the benefits of the red light. I also see people buy like these vagus nerve stimulating devices. And again, those could potentially be really helpful. I do have some clients who use them and find them supportive, but they can also be maybe even not touch the sides if you're not living your life through the lens of trying to regulate yourself. So if there's a lot of other things going on in your life that you actually need to manage and work through, or if there's a lot of unresolved trauma that you actually need to properly work through, not just use a vagus nerve device, then some of these gadgets, they may only get you so far. And likewise here, if you're not regulating your blood sugar and you're eating a load of sugar and you keep on going hypoglycemic and your blood sugar's up and down throughout the day, that's going to be very dysregulating for your nervous system. So it would be much better to master your blood sugar, which to a degree is for free, than it would be necessarily to spend a lot of money on a device that's going to regulate your vagus nerve when part of the dysregulation is coming from the food that you're eating, or the fact that you're not pacing properly, or the fact that you're watching, like having a lot of screens and blue light in the evening and staying up late and not going to bed on time. So we really want to make sure that we are mastering the basics, which for the most part are no cost, low cost, before we start to make these big investments. That being said, whenever someone asks me, Anna, should I buy this or should I buy that? I would say, buy it if you have the finances and you don't mind if it doesn't work. But a lot of people with energy limiting conditions are on a budget. And we have to be really careful about what we encourage people to spend their money on or not spend their money on. You know, I would always say if finances are tight, focus on the basics first. And when I'm talking about the basics, I'm talking about the foundational five. The foundational five, you've probably heard me refer to them many times now if you've been listening to this podcast or following me on Instagram. But these are the five foundations that I believe help to create the most amount of stability in the system of someone who's chronically unwell. And these five foundations are nervous system regulation, blood sugar management, pacing, getting enough sleep, and then managing inflammation in the body. When we do those five things, a lot of which can be done with food, lifestyle change, maybe minimal supplements, we can really create some foundations. Does that mean that you might not need to do more work or try other things? You might need to go deeper, but when you do go deeper, you'll have the foundations in place. So we want to be mindful of that before we start spending a lot of money on some of these gadgets. Likewise here, I think these two are kind of linked together, but also just this idea of starting complicated protocols before mastering the basics. So sometimes I will have people come and work with me and they've been trying all the things. They've been like taking all these supplements, they've been trying to detox, they're doing sauna, they're doing cold plunges, they're, on 20 different pills or whatever it might be, and they haven't looked at their blood sugar yet. They don't really know how to regulate their nervous system. Pacing, what's pacing? And sleep is terrible, probably because they're not supporting their nervous system, regulating their blood sugar or pacing. So we need resilience to do some of these protocols. We need enough resilience in our body to engage with more complex protocols. I can tell you from experience and from what I see with clients is detoxes are hard on the body. Taking antimicrobial herbs to deal with infections can be really, really challenging for some people. And if we haven't laid the proper foundations and we haven't built up enough resilience in the system, doing these things too soon or too intensely can often make people feel worse and not better. So we have to be really, really mindful of that. We have to be mindful that we want to start to build the body and build its capacity and its resilience and its stress tolerance from the ground up. And that starts with the basics. It starts with the nervous system. It starts with blood sugar. It starts with having an anti-inflammatory diet. It starts from pacing well. And usually when we do all of those things, we sleep better too. So this is going to be really important to have in place before we then start to engage with something that can be a little bit more destabilizing for the body. So number seven is, a lot of these last ones kind of link all together, but it's taking a whole bunch of supplements because someone on Instagram said so. Now, I don't ever think I took a supplement because someone on Instagram said so, but I know I have clients who do this. And I know that I, you know, obviously being in the job that I'm in and reading different books and doing different research, my supplement recommendations wouldn't always come from Instagram, but they would definitely come from books and things that I was reading and learning about. And so every single time I was feeling a bit bad or feeling a bit low, I would be on Google, get my credit card or bank card out, and, you know, there'd be a couple more supplements coming in the post. And every single time I was like, right, this thing is going to be the thing that helps me feel better. And it never really worked that way. What worked best for me was functional testing. I think I've spoken about this on previous episodes, but even though I'm a practitioner, I recommend functional tests to my clients all the time, I was so resistant to testing myself. And there was definitely a scarcity element here. It came down to finances. I had money in savings and I could have spent that money from my savings on the testing, but I was so afraid to let that money go because I was so afraid of like, well, I don't know how long I'm going to be sick for, and I don't know if I'm going to need this money for something else. And so eventually, I think it was like a Christmas time, and I think I just asked like various people who were maybe going to give me presents for Christmas, like, could you give me a little bit of money towards this test that I wanted to do, which was the NutriVal, which is a comprehensive nutritional test at the time. And so then I did the test and kind of never looked back. It sort of opened the floodgates on testing after that, because I got so much from doing that test and then starting to take the actions which were specific to me from that test, that then I was all for the testing and I did loads more tests on myself from that point onwards. And that's how I also found the mycotoxins as well. So in terms of the coming back to this, buying a whole bunch of supplements because someone said it helped them, the reality is different people, even though they have the same diagnostic label as you, are experiencing fatigue for different reasons. That means that something might work very well for one person, but it might not work at all for you or potentially even make you feel worse. And so therefore, we can't just guess. We really want to understand the reason why we or you as the individual is experiencing fatigue. What are the mechanisms driving the fatigue? And we can find this out by doing testing, by having a proper case review done by somebody who's trained to do it, and then addressing those unique mechanisms, not by just buying supplements because somebody else thought that that was useful for them. Now, every now and again, we get lucky, something does help us that we just try on a whim. But if you really, really want to thrive and become well, it's about understanding the mechanisms of your illness and having a well thought out, carefully paced strategy that guides you through the steps to recovering your health. So then the last one is also about supplements, and seems to be quite a few on supplements here at the end, but it is spending a lot of money on supplements before mastering your blood sugar. So again, this one is a little bit of a lie because I never did this. I actually started addressing my blood sugar very, very early on. It was one of the first things that I did and really helped a lot, and which is why I'm so passionate about it. But I do see this with clients. I have got clients I've been working with for a long time. They've perhaps come to me with a list of 15 or 20 different supplements that they're taking. And I've said, we need to check your blood sugar. We need to see what's going on here. And they've been like, yes, 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 we'll do that. It's a great idea. I'd love to do that. And months go by, and for whatever reason, they still haven't done it. And then we might be like 3 or 4 months into working together and they finally get around to ordering the CGM and doing the monitoring and whatnot. And excuse my language, it's a shit show. Their blood sugar is all over the place. It's going too high, too low. And I always say, this is so destabilizing for your system. This is so destabilizing for your nervous system. And every time your blood sugar is going that high, you are creating inflammation in your body. Yes, all these supplements that you're taking are all lovely, well and good, but how is your body supposed to use these supplements well when your blood sugar is all over the place? So if you want to learn more about blood sugar management, if I've just made you think, hang on, I need to look into this, this is one of the modules we do have in the Nurturing Resilience membership, which is there's a module dedicated specifically to blood sugar where I guide you through how to use a CGM, what data you're looking for, what to do if you're out of balance, whether you've got high blood sugar, low blood sugar, you're fluctuating between the two, whether you need to implement a ketogenic diet, whether you need to fast, whether you must make sure you definitely should not fast, and all the things in between. That's covered there. And I have got other episodes of this podcast on blood sugar as well. So that brings me to the end of this episode on things I wouldn't do if I had to do it all over again. There's probably lots more, but these were the first ones that I could think of when I initially created the post for Instagram. I'm just curious if there's anything today that's really resonated with you. I think it's all well and good to listen to a podcast. Sometimes it can be really helpful to just also think about what you'll take away or from, you know, the hour or 30 minutes you've spent listening to this today, what you'll do differently moving forward and how you'll let it influence your journey in a positive way. So I look forward to seeing you in the next episode and have a wonderful fatigue recovery day.